Testing 1, 2, 3. Okay, this is like my fifth try at recording this. I'm in the Denver airport, and I've been just overwhelmed by train whistles and police sirens and all sorts of things all during the week as I try to record this. So this is my Hampshire 100 race report from what I hope to be a quiet spot, and I hope my batteries don't die in the Denver airport. So here we go. The sickening crunch left no doubt in my mind, as tired and fatigue-ridden as my mind was after 4.5 hours of hard riding, relentless climbs and descent. It was a visceral sound, I felt. It was like part of my own body had been rent and torn. That sickening crunch told me there was no need to pedal anymore. That sickening crunch told me my race was done. 43 miles in, 4,000 feet of climbing, I had just passed a checkpoint where a man sat in a lawn chair copying down race numbers as we cut over a rough dirt road. 15 feet of road and the trail tucked back into the forest. I leaned left to tuck into the downward sloping corner and take advantage of the momentum into the trail and the next technical climb that was sure to be coming. There was a tree that had fallen in a previous season. Its top stuck into the trail like a paintbrush. One of the dried, dead fingers of branch poked its evil wares into my chain and derailleur. There was a sickening crunch, and my day was done. I dismounted to see my derailleur hanging, disembodied, strange, and wrong, like a fractured limb. I walked back to the checkpoint and asked him to call for a sweeper ride. I was soaked, partially from the gallons of sweat on this humid day, and partially from the series of deep puddles and mud holes I had just blown through. I was like a mud-covered novelty. I took off my backpack, sat down in the dirt and debris of the forest floor. I took off my soaking gloves, unclipped my muddy helmet, wrung out a great stream of sweat from my bandana. Every time I closed my eyes, images of onrushing pine needles, trails with green, moss-covered rocks played like an endless movie loop effect in my head. I lay back on the ground, closed my eyes, and tried to nap. The day had begun early. I rolled out of bed at 4:30 a.m., jumped into my race clothes, ate the food, and drank the coffee that I had prepared the previous evening. I had driven up to the start and back the day before to pick up my packet and to make sure I knew how to get there without getting lost. I washed, cleaned, greased, and prepped the Motobacane 29er. I tightened the spokes to correct some wheel wobble. I pumped the tires up to 50 pounds each. I packed my backpack with food and filled the 70-ounce water bladder. I mixed 2 24-ounce bike bottles with Gatorade and racked them in the cages. I put all the stuff in my car and mounted the bike on the back. I laid out my clothes from top to bottom. I did not want to have to think at 4:30 a.m. I wanted to get up, eat, and go in 15 minutes. And I executed perfectly. I hit the starting line in the parking lot just before 6 a.m. I had my bike prepped and ready for the 6:15 a.m. rider meeting. No stress. They sent the riders off in waves. It looked to be around 300 riders. I was in the Novice 5, fifth wave. Around 7 a.m. we were off. I was full of adrenaline, and I was working way too hard, even though I knew I shouldn't and thought I wasn't. The way most mountain bike endurance races work is that they give you the first 15 or 20 miles of relatively easy riding to sort everyone out, then they slam you into the hard technical stuff in the middle miles, and then they tend to relent a bit towards the end. I didn't even see the 10-mile aid station. It was in the first 20 miles that I managed to warm up and managed to make an ass out of myself, confirming my novice status. I was riding with the new Crank Brothers candy pedals that I recently installed, and the unique thing about these pedals is that they're designed for a right-sided release. To get out of your pedals, you twist your heel out to release, and on these pedals, the right side has a 15-degree release, but the left side has a 25-degree release. And early in the race, we came into a section of active railroad where we were riding on the tight shoulder of the track. It was about a foot wide with that ugly, chunky, crushed rock, and for some reason I decided this would be a great time to reach down and grab a bottle for a drink. And did I mention that the right side of the trail dropped off, and the left side was bounded by the train track ties, about 12 inches tall? So I look up, and there's a trestle crossing coming. And I'm trying to ride with one hand and juggle the bottle with the other. It's early in the race, so I'm in a long line of riders, I try to pull over, and yep, the left foot doesn't have room to clip out, and I crash onto the tracks. Everyone has to stop, while I sheepishly try to get my sheet together. Shortly after that, we hit a big climb up the back of Crotchet Mountain Ski Area, and that was the first hike a bike. It's no fun pushing that big motorbike up a 15% grade in mountain bike shoes on a loose, rocky surface. And this is where I realized that my lack of running recently is really becoming noticeable, and my hamstrings are screaming, but still, I consistently out-hiked the bikers. At the top, we careened on the ski slope, and it's just as steep as a climb, but with these massive water breaks, like 3-4 foot tall speed bumps that send you flying as you try to break down the hill. And I survived, but the EMTs were there, with the lights on, with the meat wagon, taking away one of the elites that wasn't as lucky. One of the things that mountain bikers stress about going into a race is what kind of tires to put on, what kind of tires to run. And depending on the weather conditions and trail surfaces, the right tire tread can make a big difference. The race director here said that no matter what kind of tires you chose, you'd only be right 20% of the time. And this was true. My small block Kenda 8s were, as it turns out, a pretty good choice because the next section was a long, straight, flat, sandy section. And I partnered up with an older age grouper, and we took turns pulling through this section and worked together to average around 13 plus miles per hour in the sand. We did a little Lance Armstrong peloton. And it was early in the race that I got my ovation, too. There was a trail entrance with a big log across it, way too big to ride over, like 20, 30 inches in diameter, and they had taken a 2x6 board, a skinny board, and made a ramp over the log, like 4 feet ramp up, 4 foot ramp down. And there was a crowd of spectators here for some reason, as we were turning from a road section into a trail section, and everyone in front of me was dismounting and hoisting their bikes over the log, but I rode up and down the ramp, and the handful of spectators gave me a big cheer. And this was all in the early easy miles of the course. And then we rolled into the power line section. And here's a race tip for you. If the race description includes the phrase power line, expect to get your ass kicked. This particular gem, still in the first 20 miles, mind you, was like a half a mile of 15% plus muddy, rocky, hellacious hike-a-bike in the full sun. And the other thing that makes perfect sense about endurance mountain bike races is that what goes up must come down, and what goes down must come up. And this race had a total of over 7,000 feet of climbing. And to squeeze all that into 100K, you have to go up a lot, and you have to go down a lot. And this means strategically, in the race, you need to recover in the downhills because there is an uphill coming. And this helps you anticipate and get into the right gear ratios. And you get into a sort of cadence. And the only breaks are those points between the ups and the downs where the course spends a few miles meandering across a valley or a ridge on its way to the next up or the next down. But still, you know it's coming. And after the power line climb, we got slammed into this bone-jarring rocky descent. And there were still a lot of riders around me. And the ups and down cause that familiar accordion effect where everybody bunches up. And all it takes is one tentative soul riding the brakes, and we were all stacked up holding on for dear life down the sketchy drops, trying not to kill the person in front or to crash. And apparently, I have less concern for my well-being than some of the riders I was with, because I was really wishing they would get the hell out of my way on the descents. And I find that on the 29er with the bigger wheels, it's easier to go faster on the bad stuff than to try to brake too much. Just get behind the seat, grit your teeth, and go, baby. And since I have no skills, I use momentum and speed to my advantage. How about all those push-ups and crunches and core work stuff you've been doing, Chris? Did that help? Why? Yes, it did. My arms were still sore, and my back was protesting, but I was not defenseless in immobilizing pain like I was for most of the Wilderness 101 last year. Well, how about those long road mile sessions that you put in? Did that help? Why, yes, it also did. On the flatter road and dirt road sections, I was noticeably faster, and any place where I could get into a good pedal cadence, I was very comfortable with no lactic acid buildup. Oh, so it was easy then? Hell no. I was working hard. If you look at my heart rate and you look at the chart afterwards, I averaged in the 140s, which is zone 5 for me. It's higher than I would race a marathon or even a half marathon at. So overall, my conditioning was good, and I felt I had the strength, but my effort level was very high, and I was starting to pay for it when I got clipped. I don't think I was fueling well enough, and I was quite fatigued in the high miles, but my muscles weren't cooked. Even at the end, when I needed to climb or to scale an obstacle, I could reach down and fire up the engine and find the energy. So on that last sketchy descent down into the 25-mile aid station, I lost my sunglasses, they rattled off, and one of my bottles rattled out of the cage. But it was okay, because you didn't need a lot of fluids on this course, there was plenty of support. I was never close to running out, even when the temperatures got into the 90s and it was quite humid. I ate a banana, took a pee, took a picture, took a couple Endurolites, got back in the trails, I was happy and gung-ho. Then things got technical. Then the miles to the next aid station were just a blur of climbs and descents and flats. Nothing too hyper-technical, but just relentless. And the course was extremely well-marked. Even so, I managed to ride down the wrong trail at least 5 times, only to be confronted by the big orange W. That means wrong way. Some riders weren't so lucky. You can tell when some low-numbered riders who look really good blow by you deep into a race that they got lost somewhere, and they're hustling to catch up. Somewhere in these miles, there was a steep downhill road section that saw me post my fastest speed of the day at 41 miles per hour, and it felt pretty good, tucked down, chest almost laying on the seat with the wind rushing by. Into the 30s, I was riding catch-up with a Spanish couple. The boyfriend or husband was obviously a good rider who was riding with his female companion to keep her company. So he'd ride up all the steep hills that I had to walk and then wait at the top for her to catch up. And I was trying to get in front of them because she was really tentative on the downhills. But they were able to stay close because the miles in the 30s were very tight and very technical riding, which is not my specialty. And there were several stonewall crossings, switchbacks, stream crossings, log obstacles that really rewarded the skilled rider and caused the right-handed clip-out novice rider to fall down the mud cursing. In the hills, they were still relentless. Mr. Spanish rider had an elevation monitor and took great delight in telling us how much we had to do. Yes, baby in the background. Into the 39-mile, this is the way it's been trying to record this all week. Always something. Into the 39-mile aid station, I was beat, but still moving. My remaining bottle, I filled it, shoved down a cliff bar, refilled my water bladder, joked around with the volunteers, took another picture and headed out, still in good spirits. And even though it was getting hot and the course was getting hard, immediately out of this water station, we tore down this muddy dirt road into the first real unavoidable water hazards. And as you approach the mud puddles that are typically at the bottoms of hills, which makes sense, you're typically traveling at a high rate of speed. You have to look ahead and quickly determine, A, can you avoid the puddle to the right or the left? And if so, you choose a line and you go for it, pedaling hard to keep the mud from grabbing you. But B, if you can avoid the mud puddle, then you have to figure out where it's shallowest or easiest. And I managed the first puddles with a minimal immersion and without having to dismount. But then there was this big one that you could not avoid. In this case, you just have to hit the gas, unweight the front wheel, and go. And the riders with actual ability will go into these puddles with a wheelie in order to keep from getting thrown off their bike and getting stuck. This sucker turned out to be pretty deep, up over my pedals. I made it through, but I was soaked. On top of my already soaked, sweat-soggy gear, I added a nice layer of mud. And these are the joys of mountain bike racing. And I was struggling through the next few technical miles in this state when a man in a lawn chair called out my number. I tucked into a corner and heard the sickening crunch of fate. A nice fellow in a pickup truck transported me and another nice fellow with a bad back to the finish. And according to the sign on the tree, I had ridden just under 43 miles. And in a nice touch of numerology, I had been at it for just over 4 hours and 30 minutes, and it was coming up on 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I hosed off my bike, got my dry stuff out of the Camry, and promptly, in a DNF-fogged moment, locked my keys in the car. Resigned and tired, I went off and took a shower and had something to eat. Eventually, I found a coat hanger and MacGyvered my way into the Camry by opening the trunk and climbing through. It wasn't a bad day of racing. I think I was performing well when fate snatched my bike out from under me. I'm 1 for 3 in these endurance mountain bike races, and both my DNFs have been mechanical. I'm pretty happy with my conditioning and never got into full-on suffer mode in this race. The course was much more technical than the Wilderness 101, albeit 40 miles shorter. and very similar in topology to the Vermont 50 course. One thing that struck me is that it just isn't as much fun to do these endurance events without some friends. It really takes away from the experience not to have some comrades in it with you. And what happens now? I don't know. As the guru says, I can't worry about what has happened and can't live in what has not yet happened. So all I have is the present. And the present is the only reality. And that reality becomes hyper-focused in endurance events, where the present is telescoped and called out in cold, stark relief. You and your machine against the course in the here and now. And that's where I come closest to finding the truth in this chaotic world. When everything is stripped away, and I am naked in the clean now of maximum effort. I'll call it a win, and I'll see you out there.
From my 1983 Honda XR80.